Hi, my name's Beverly Hearn. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, God, it's good to be here tonight. It's good to be sober and in an AA meeting. Oh, my God. I want to thank Mike and Stephanie for being such wonderful host and hostess. They came and picked me up in this big Humvee, and she rolled down the window, and I went, wow, and told me they were sending a movie star. Felt so special. And I stood there and I stupidly said, Beverly, as if that was one of their names. Oh, I don't know. And then we went and had dinner. Thank you so much. And I got to meet Lori and Russ, wherever he is. And it was just a really, really nice. I love Las Vegas. I worked out here for a number of years. My best friend lived here for 5 years. I don't gamble, so it's not a problem for me. I like to shop, though, and I like Vegas because you can shop until midnight, and then you can go see a movie. It's perfect. I love that. Coffee, I love it. And there's nothing like, you know, shopping till midnight, having a chocolate truffle, a cup of coffee, and going to a movie. It's perfect for a drunk. A sober drunk, if you know what I mean. Anyways, I've been sober since October 30th of 1992. My home group is the Pacific Group. I have a sponsor. Her name is Sharon B., and I am blessed to have that woman in my life. I think she's an outstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she gives me something to aspire to. And that's why I love Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm going to tell you, my whole life I never had anything to aspire to. I mean, it was offered to me, but I just didn't get it. I just didn't get it. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it took me a long time to figure that out, too. But I love coming to these rooms. I love coming to my meetings, because you give me something to aspire to. And you know, I was born an alcoholic. I don't get into that debate. You know, some of you crossed over a line. That's good. I was just born that way. I'm a 10-month baby. I didn't want to have anything to do with you guys. I was born with long hair, fingernails. I came out screaming, claws out, you know, and just full of fear. I remember when I was a kid, just to give you a little something about my personality, I used to have night terrors. I don't know if you know what those are, but they're nightmares when you're awake. So you don't even have to go to sleep to experience this. And you know, I would lay up at night in bed with the covers pulled over my head and just one little eyeball and a nostril sticking out, you know, breathing, trying to breathe under the covers there, watching, because I just knew something was coming to get me. And I had to have my bed pushed up against the wall and because something might sneak up behind me, and I wanted to be ready for it. You know, I'm 4 years old, but I'm prepared. And I would just, you know, I'd be pumped full of adrenaline. I mean, just like I am right now, just sweating, pumped full of adrenaline. And guarding the perimeter, you know, all night long. And then my mom would come in the morning and she'd want to wake me up. And of course there would be an argument because I'd just gotten to sleep about an hour ago. So I'm tired because I've been up all night guarding the perimeter. And it was just, you know, it was hard. I needed a drink early. I just needed a drink in kindergarten. Recess was tough. You know, you guys were out there in the playground. And it was just all so overwhelming for me. Oh, God, I'd just go out there. I remember, I mean, I was so self-obsessed as a kid that I can remember recess in kindergarten, you know. And I'd go out there and I'd see you, you know, playing your little dodgeball or whatever you were doing, and there was something between you and I. And I know now that was alcoholism. I know now that it was feeling different. I couldn't have told you what it was then. It was just something that kept me from being able to approach you and to talk to you and to play with you. I couldn't do that. So what I did was I went out on the back fence where there was honeysuckle growing, and I picked the honeysuckle, and you can pull the little stem and suck the sugar out of that, and that's what I did on recess. And I was just a mess. I really was. My mom and dad tried hard. I grew up in a home with alcoholism and domestic violence. It doesn't make me an alcoholic. It just means that I learned a lot of really nice things in the home, like somebody scares you, pick something up and throw it at them. Knives scare people. Act big, they'll go away. You know, nice things like that. So I just kind of honed my character defects living in a home like that, but it certainly is not why I'm alcoholic. My mom and dad loved me with every fiber of their being. Those people love me more than anybody else on the whole planet, and for me to think that they would be the cause of a life-threatening illness is just how insane alcoholism is. Because only people like us think the people that love us the most are the people that are trying to kill us. And I believe that. My whole life, I thought it was their fault. If my mom didn't drink, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. If my dad hadn't beat her, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. If I wouldn't have gone to public school, private school, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. If I wouldn't have started public school after 7 years of private school, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. If I would have played the violin instead of the clarinet, I wouldn't drink. I mean, you know, I had all these reasons why I drank, and none of them were, I didn't know what alcoholism was, you know. I just didn't know. So I did. I went to private school. I went to Hawthorne Christian School. We wore these little gray dresses. They were very cute, and little blue ties, and I immediately started to get into trouble in the first grade. Some little girl, I'm a line monitor. How many line monitors do we have in the room? I can't stand that. You know, just get to the back of the line. I don't know who you think you are that you think you can skip line, and that irritated me from an early age. So in the first grade, you know, some little girl cut in front of me in the line to go to the bathroom, and it just made me mad. I was just indignant about that. So when she came out, I pushed her and told her to go to hell. And those were fighting words in a Christian school. You do not say those kind of, that's like H-E double toothpicks. And you don't say that word. And so I got my mouth washed out with soap in front of the whole class. And that probably wasn't my first resentment. I think my first resentment would have been birth. But it definitely was a close second. And so off I went through, you know, my very meager attempt at school. I'm not one of those people who excelled and then drank and it all fell apart. I just never tried. I really wasn't interested in anything you were saying or anything you wanted me to do. I had my own agenda. It was all up in here. I'm a daydreamer. I'm probably brilliant if you could get me to pay attention, but I can't pay attention, so we never figured that one out. And I just tell you, you know, in the seventh grade, I played in the band. You know, let me tell you what I was like before I started drinking. I went to a private Christian school. My dad worked for the airlines. We got to travel a lot. It was very nice. We had 2 vacations a year in Hawaii. My mom was a bookkeeper. Yes, there was alcoholism in the home. There was violence. The cops did come. You know, I was kind of a referee in a boxing ring. So that part of the picture was there too. It was very ugly. I don't want to minimize that. I did experience that as a kid, but there were all these other things that my parents tried to do so well for me. You know, we went to church on every Sunday morning. I went to Sunday school at an early age. You know, I heard the story of David and Goliath. I thought, you know what? I want to be like David. I want to rock. I'm killing Goliath and the whole boogeyman thing. So I wanted to be baptized. And, you know, I sang in the choir at church. I played the clarinet in the band at school. I sang in the chorus at church. I mean, I had all these, you know, hell, if I just would have stuck to it, I'd be a Renaissance woman today. But at 11 years old, I transferred into to public school in the seventh grade, and I'm sure that's why I drank. And I had this whole revelation that I'd been living this sheltered life. I'd never heard of the Beatles. I just didn't know anything about anything. And yeah, you know, there were all these different groups, and I didn't fit in any of them. There were no longer any uniforms. People were wearing Schmendifers and Dittos and Earth shoes, and I was just like, ay, yay, yay. My mom wanted to put me in these little strawberry jumpers, and oh. God, it was a nightmare, you know, this little brown jumper with a strawberry on it. And oh, yeah. God, love her. And, but anyway, somehow, you know, and I felt ugly. I mean, just my whole life, I would look in the mirror and I saw this ugly human being. I just felt so ugly. I had this dark curly hair and, you know, one eyebrow across my face and long gangly legged and, you know, I played the clarinet, for God's sake. It was not an attractive instrument to play. It wasn't cool like the saxophone. You know, it was the clarinet. It's a beautiful instrument. It really is. It's an amazing, amazing instrument. But I never appreciated anything I had or could do. And I played it for a number of years, so I didn't play too shabby. I mean, just by virtue of having the thing in my mouth for all those years, I had to play at least a tune or two. I had skills early. And I needed them later. Hey, a girl's got to make a living. Anyways, I somehow fell in with the jocks and the cheerleaders. I don't know how that happened, but I ended up having this little party in my garage, and I drank that night. It's not the first drink I ever took. It was alcohol in my home all my life. But that night, something happened to me. I was not consciously aware of it. I didn't drink and go, I didn't, you know, that's not what happened to me. I drank that night and I could finally just relax and enjoy your company. No longer was it you on the playground and I can't approach you anymore. Man, that night I danced, I danced with one boy. I kissed another boy. They threw a sheet over us while we were dancing. It was just fabulous. I mean, I had two eyebrows. I had breasts that night. My hair was blonde and straight. You know, I was Barbie. And you know, by Monday morning, they were talking about me. And they were saying things that wouldn't be true for a few years, granted. But I never, ever associated those consequences with my drinking. All I know is that drinking felt good. It made me pretty. It allowed me to be a part of you. And all my life, I never realized how badly, how desperately I wanted to be a part of the human race. You know, I was in my hotel room today, and I'm part of a group that's very active, and I've always been active in AA, but man, I went over to the Pacific group in October, and I haven't slept since. And you just get little brief naps. And I just gotta get up, got something to do, we gotta go, we gotta make coffee, set up chairs. I mean, it's great for somebody like me. I'm a type A, and I need a lot of things to do to keep me busy. And I was in my room today, and I was like, I just don't like being here alone. And I like my solitude, yes, but I am a social animal. I'm a very social animal. I love to work the room. I love to be a part of you. And I've learned how to do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous without having to take a drink. But up until that point in my life, man, I had to have a drink to do that. And from that day forward, whenever I could get my hands on alcohol, that's what I did. I drank. And by the time I was a freshman in high school, we were up in the mornings. The first thing we would do, planning our demise. How are we getting out of school today? What are we going to do? You know, we're going to leave at break. We're going to leave at lunch. Whose house are we going to? Whose mom's liquor cabinet? We're going to mix some drinks. We're hanging out at the liquor store. We're pimping bottles of TJ Swan, you know, slow gin and Southern Comfort. Oh, man, that stuff is good. Put that with a little 7-Up. It's perfect for a 13-year-old. It's nice and sweet. Goes down easy. You know, beer bongs, man, and I wanted drinks like a sailor. I'd never met a sailor in my life, but by God, I was dating a football player. If they could do 3 beers and a bong, I wanted to do 4, you know. And I just loved it. You know, we'd go to these parties. This is back when you could drink and drive, you know, before they started all that fuss about drinking and driving. And we didn't put a case in the back of the car. We put a keg in the back of the car. You got to be careful with the bumps, but then you just pass around the tap. It's great. We drive up to Silverado Canyon, you know, we just drink all night long, tequila, tap in our mouth, play, you know, let's drive with the lights off and see who can fall out of the car while moving and not get injured. It was just fantastic. I mean, we had so much fun. I dated a football player, and we were like a roving group of bandits, you know. We'd go to other people's parties and beat them up and drink all their liquor. And it was fun. God, I had so much fun, you know. I just felt, you know, let me tell you, alcohol, you know, it's like if I could have had a drink when I was 4 in bed, lying there waiting for the boogeyman, it's not that I would have gotten up and said hi to the boogeyman. I would have got up and kicked his ass. That's what alcohol does for me, you know? It just makes me feel good. It makes me feel powerful. My whole life I'd felt afraid. I'd felt afraid and I'd felt apart from, and man, alcohol just, man, I just feel so good. It's like superhuman stuff for me. But I started getting a lot of trouble consequently. I mean, when you're drinking like that at that age, boy, I'm going to tell you, you stop going to school, you know, your parents start wanting to know where you are, you know, the teachers, how come you weren't in class? It's none of your business, you know. It's my education. I'm 15. I got a handle on things. I don't know why you're so interested in why I'm not in class. You know, the vice principal wants to see you again, really, we shouldn't meet so often. People are going to start to talk. I mean, it was just, ugh. You know, I just was in so much trouble all the time. And I was, you know, I had become extremely belligerent, you know. I lived in a home where, you know, violence was the answer for everything. So, you know, if my mom and dad had a question for me, my solution was to break all their windows, tell them I hated them, curse at them, and then run out the door, run around the corner to my friend David's house and drink some tequila and say, you know, if you had parents like me, man, you'd drink too. And I just barely managed to get out of high school. I think they just got rid of me because they just didn't want me back another year. They were just like, get her out of here. Just, you know, they knew that it was actually better for me than holding me back a year. And I went off to college. That lasted about 3 months until I met him. And by then I was quite sure that living with my mother and father was my problem. They were my problem. I drank because of them. And I don't even think that I thought that I drank because of them. I just thought that all the problems that I had were because of them, because alcohol was always my solution. You know, whenever something went wrong, I drank. You know, I so identify with that. If you're new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If drinking is the solution for you, you are in the right place. Trust me, you're in the right place. That's why we're here, because we need a spiritual solution. We need something to take the place of alcohol. And the Big Book talks about that. You know, have you a sufficient substitute for alcohol? Yes, and it is vastly more than that. fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that part of the book. There you will find freedom from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. You know, I love that. That's what I found here. You've replaced alcohol with something better, and I don't need to drink to be a part of humanity. But then I did, you know, so I met this guy, and, you know, we start living together. We're shacking up, as my mom calls it, and he's a pharmaceutical technician for the Navy, so he'd come home with bags of Darvon and, you know, I mean grocery bags of this stuff, and, you know, we just drink alcohol and pop pills, and we decided to get married. That was a good idea, and thought that would be great, and we did. We got married, and I'm standing at the front of the aisle that day, and I'm looking down that aisle at him, and I just knew right then I hated that man, and but I was going to marry him, by God. There are 300 people sitting out there, and we got an image to uphold here. And at night, we got into our Chevy Nova. We were supposed to drive out of town. We couldn't even do that. And about 4 o'clock that morning, I am drunk and insane, because I'm never just mildly intoxicated. I am almost always insanely drunk. You know, and he said the wrong thing to me, and I don't know why, but I'm always stark naked as a jaybird. That's me. That's my number. I'm always naked and got a butcher knife in my hand, and he's trying to leave, and I can't figure out why he don't want to hang out with me. So 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm chasing him down the street, stark naked at 4 a.m. down Huntington Harbor, you know, with a butcher knife. I don't know why you're leaving! And I always have very successful relationships. You know, and there began the series of me, you know, moving back to my mom and dad's house until I could find another him, and then I'd move in with him, and, you know, until I'd chase him down the street with a lamp or a knife or something, or hit him with a hickory axe handle or something, and, you know, then for some reason he didn't want me to live there anymore, and then I'd go back to my mom and dad's, and it was just, you know, it was just a nightmare, and in the meantime, you know, I finally figured out I had to get a job, that somebody wasn't going to always support me. Not that I ever paid a bill in my life. I didn't get here with any kind of credit damage, because I never got a credit card, I never paid a bill, I never had an apartment in my name, none of it. I'm totally irresponsible. You take care of me, okay? I don't take care of me. You know, let's not try not to be, you know, don't be too demanding on me here. And so I got a job in a beer bar, and that's, you know, started my career of slinging things in a teabag and bra and high heels. And, you know, my claim to fame was that I could do the splits on the pool table so that it would improve your aim of certain pockets. And I sold more beer than anybody ever sold in that bar, and I was so proud of that. And let me tell you something. Christian school, the choir, the chorus, Sunday school, the clarinet. It's long since gone. You know, I'm just a shadow of the human being I was before, and every value that my mother and father had ever taught me was gone, and every little piece of dignity that I had left was gone already, and I was young. I was in my early 20s, and it was all gone. And I just, you know, I started to become attracted to the criminal element because, you know, water seeks its own level, and, you know, lower and lower companionship, and the more black tattoos you've got, and I know where those kind come from, I can tell. And I want to date a hardened criminal. If you've done Chino, that's not enough for me. You got to go to, like, Folsom, you know, or San Quentin. I want you to have done long, hard time for things like murder. Now I want to date you. And I brought home my next husband. We rode off on the back of a Harley to Las Vegas and got married. They probably have a record of it somewhere here. We never could find the record. So I may still be married. I don't know. Mark Anthony Apchuk. So God bless him. I don't know where he was. But he'd just gotten out of San Quentin. He'd done 11 years there for shooting a cop. And I thought that was real cool. He was, you know, he'd been in institutions from the age of 7. You know, he had black cat ink from here to here. And if, you know, he was smoking a cigarette out the window, we were getting pulled over, you know, because they'd just see all that ink on his arm. And I brought him home to my dad one day, and I remember my dad stopping me as I'm walking out the door, and he grabs my arm, and he goes, "Do you realize that man's a hardened criminal?" And I said, yeah, I do. And that just so impressed me. And you know, by now I realize that there must be some kind of a problem. I'm not sure what it is, but I know there's something wrong with me. I've kind of known for a number of years now that something is wrong. What it is, I'm not sure. I'm starting to think that it may have something to do with me. And so I finally put my finger on it. It's a lack of discipline. That's right, I lack discipline. And my dad was a military man. I thought, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to join the Army, and I did. I joined the Army. Why does everybody think that's so funny? I got along very well with all of my commanding officers. did every hot legs contest in town. I almost got in trouble for that. They said it was behavior unbecoming of a soldier. I was like, what? I have nice legs. I didn't get it. Anyways, so I joined the Army, and they sent me off to, you know, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where they have basic training, and I did, you know, 8 weeks of basic training, and I was sober the whole time. You have to be, because, you know, all you do is live, breathe, sleep, basic training, basically. And it was the perfect environment for me. You know, they tell you what to do. They tell you when to eat. They wake you up. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And you are so tired, it's like good Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why groups that are so active, that's why it works so well. It's like the military. It's like basic training. You know, if you're new, get commitments. And, you know, you think we want you to set. No, that's not it. We just want you to be so freaking tired. You've got no, you just don't even think about drinking. You just are so tired that you just can't wait to get home and go to bed. And then the next morning, bam, your phone's ringing, you're up again, and it's all over again. It's just like the military. It was so easy to stay sober those eight weeks. And nobody recognizes that you're totally insane because you're, you know, you're running, you're sit-ups, more PT, drill sergeant, more PT. You know, you're out there, you got it. They give you a rifle. It's great. They give you automatic weapons, light anti-tank weapons. You're shooting at tanks. Those things are the bomb, literally. I had so much fun. You get to crawl around in the mud and the rain. Drill sergeant comes along, tries to steal your weapon in the middle of the night. God, I loved that. I just loved that. It was so much fun for me. But I got put on a hold. I told them that I'd been to jail. By then, I'd been in and out of jail a couple of times. You know, minor stuff. You know how we are. And I'd actually been in quite a bit of trouble by then. And, you know, I told them about my record. I forgot a few things. You know, I a lot of times I get arrested in a blackout. I don't remember things specifically. I mean, come on. Like today when I fill out an employment application, have you ever been to jail? Yes. Okay? If you want the answer to that, then you know, you're going to have to look it up yourself. Okay? Because I can't remember the details, for God's sake. So, you know, they said I lied. I didn't. I really, honestly, I didn't lie. You know, I told them about what I remembered about, and they did an NSA clearance on me. They found that there were some things that I didn't tell them. They wanted, you know. But I got to tell you, by then, you know, I'd already found, you know, the bulldog, because I was in Fort Gordon, Augusta by then, and, you know, everything's a bulldog. And I found the bulldog bar, and I got to tell you, drugs are part of my story. I like to do coke. I started doing it when 16. By the time I was in my early 20s, I was smoking a lot of it, and I was hanging out in the ghettos down in Georgia, and I was smoking coke. And I was drinking gin, because I like gin. I don't know what you like to drink. I like gin. I like that. And Bill's story, it says 3 bottles of bathtub gin and then Oblivion. I like that. That works for me. And I'm hanging out in places nice girls don't go, where the taxi cabs won't take you, and I'm doing really, really insane things. And my life is always on the line, and I'm a soldier. And if I would have gotten caught, they would have put me in Fort Leavenworth, and they never would have let me out, because they just don't mess around with that. Alcohol's okay, but drugs, uh-uh. And I was released from the Army. I came home. I had no hope. And by then, I don't know why, but for some reason, that was like my last-ditch effort. I really thought that that was what was wrong with me, that that was going to solve my problem. And when I came home, I was just more desperate than ever. And if I wasn't insane and sick at that point, boy, did my drinking take off from there. I mean, I'm already a daily drunk. I'm already, you know, I already use and drink every single day of my life. And now I'm just, you know, I'm on that death march. I'm on that death march. Yeah, I'm working out at some club in Upland, you know, and I'm a stripper by profession. I was for a number of years, and it's pretty hard to get fired from one of those jobs, although people like us have an uncanny knack for it. And, you know, I'm working at this really good club. We're making a lot of money, and I needed that money. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I needed it. And I come in one night, and I'm real, real sick, and I haven't had any money. I've been on a nice long run, and I'm in withdrawals. And I'm lying on the floor, and I'm shaking, and I'm shivering, and I told my boss, I got to go home early tonight. I got to go. I just came in just to make enough money so I could get out of there. There's no alcohol served in nude bars. I couldn't drink. I had to go get a drink. I had to go. I had to go. You know how it is. When you got to go, you got to go. And he came in, and he said, if you got to leave early, you're fired. And I said, I'm leaving early. And so that ended my career doing that, and that's when I just turned to the streets, you know. And I'll do anything for $5 or $500. I don't care. I'm not a lady by then. I don't care anymore. I just don't care. I just need my money to get where I'm going, because I don't want to live with you anymore, because you have too many demands on me, and I'm tired of fighting with you. You know, when I want what I want it. So just, you know, I like money. Money sets me free to live how I want to live, and I want to live like I want to live in the gutter. That's what I like. So I'm running around with some girls, and you know, we're just, you know, doing all the things that we do. And sometimes we're living indoors and sometimes we're not. And sometimes we're working the streets and sometimes we're not. And we'd been on a pretty light, nice long run. And I was, this girl, Jana, was started talking about sobriety. And I'd never heard that before in my life. I'd never heard the word sobriety. If you can imagine, my whole life, I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never heard of sobriety. I didn't know that people like, I knew in my heart by then, I knew, I was 27 years old, and I knew in my heart by then that people like us live and die like that. That's it. We just live like that, and then we die like that. And I had accepted that. That was okay with me. That's my path. That's my life. I don't know what you do with your little jobs and your little houses and your little kids and your little dogs and all that crap. I do what I do, and this is how I'm dying. And I just don't know any other way. And she started talking about sobriety, and that just got stored away. And I don't know, it was 3 or 6 months later, and, you know, I'd sold the battery out of my, well, I had this little hot pink Baja bug. You know, when you drink a lot, don't drive a pink car. with a stinger on the back. You know, I mean, just, hi, God, it was just a walking ticket. You know, right now I've got warrants in 3 counties. I'm just flying under the radar all the time. And I'd gone out to, you know, we'd sold the battery and I'd turned some tricks, put enough money together to get some gas so we could get some drugs and we could get out to Palm Springs and, you know, something great out in Palm Springs. There was nothing in Palm Springs. It was a condemned motel. And that's where we were living, and the plumbing was backed up. It was on the 111 where all those old hotels were, and they're starting to tear those down and refix them. But at the time, they were not. They were just condemned, and people were squatting in them, and one of them was me. It was a lovely life. And, you know, I'm running around with these people. I'm stealing cars. I'm just doing all kinds of insane stuff, and nothing unusual. Just I'm doing it in Palm Springs now. And I go up to this one, the first one when you first come in on the 111, and I'm hanging out with these people, and there were some gangsters there, and I was, you know, entertaining them, and apparently somebody didn't like what I was doing, and she pulled a gun on me and asked me to leave, and that's when it suddenly hit me that I should get sober. And I picked up the phone, I crossed the street without my things, I was barefoot, it was July, it was like 126 degrees that day. I was sweating and sick across the street in my bare feet. It was hot. And I made a phone call to a girl in Painted Hills who had worked in that club that I'd been in, and asked her if she'd come and get me, and she said, I won't. And I said, well, if my mom comes and gets you from here, she gets, give me your mom's phone number, because I don't want you to stay at my house. If your mom's going to come, you know, I'll come and get you, and then your mom can come and get you from here, but you can't stay at my house. I'm not giving you any money. Don't ask me for anything. You know, just let's be clear about that. That's how welcome I was. And by now, I don't talk to anybody. Nobody wants me around. The people I grew up with, they'd long since given up on me. They called me a serious diehard battery for a number of years until they finally just got to where, you know, they just didn't even want me there anymore. You know, my dad hadn't talked to me in a number of years. My mom will always talk to me because she's an alcoholic, you know. But she came and picked me up. I came around Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought you guys were cute. I thought a lot of the guys were cute, too. And I sat around here for 60 days and I didn't do anything. And you know what? If you don't give me a spiritual solution and you don't get me into action and I'm not drinking, something's going to happen. Okay, because I'm like a time bomb, and it doesn't take long for me. 2-3 days, and I'm starting to hover. You know, I'm starting to vibrate in the chair. You know, I'm starting to come into meetings and tell you, you know what, that I hate you, and you guys are full of crap. And what are you also smiling about? You know, it's so funny around here. And, you know, and I just get, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent, because I have to have a drink to be with you. There's got to be something in my system so that I can be with you. And if you think meetings alone will keep you sober, good luck to you. Yeah, boy, I wish you the best, you know. Because if you're a real alcoholic, you're going to find that you're going to have a lot of problems just trying to stay sober on meetings alone. And I didn't, you know, I had a lady who was trying to help me. God bless her. She was trying to help me. But I just don't listen, you know, because I'm smarter than you. You know, I'm living in the gutter, but boy, I'm a lot smarter than you. And I got up one day and I left a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to my mom and dad's house and I started pouring shots. And I don't know how many drinks it takes to take the edge off at that point, but it took me a few. And man, I'm telling you, man, when the fire finally hit my belly, oh, God, it was just, oh, my God. Whew, that was a close call. I mean, I thought I was going to implode or something, you know, and I just, Man, I went to the back refrigerator, got myself a couple of Budweisers, and I was ready to get on with the business of living again, or at least living the way I know how to live. You know, I went out to the car, cracked one beer, took a big drink, put it between my legs, put the other one between the passenger seat and the emergency brake, and lit a cigarette, started up the car, and drove straight to the gutter. Because that's where I hang out. And it was like a 9-month death march into Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you, man. I met this guy, and he was from Peru. You can imagine what he did for trade, and we did a lot of drinking and we did a lot of drugs. And I tried so many times to get sober during that 9 months. I wanted to get sober so bad. I realized that what I had let go of was the most incredible gift that I'd ever experienced, that what you had was what I needed, that I really, really, really had a problem and wasn't sure it was alcoholism, maybe, maybe not, but whatever you guys were doing, it was better than what I was doing, and I couldn't get back because the craving had been set into motion. That's it. It's over. Let me tell you how I am when I need a drink. Okay, I will slap myself in the face silly to get to the liquor store. That's how I will drive. Slapping myself, screaming at the top of my lungs to keep my eyes open. Bouncing off the 50 wall. I got here with this little truck and it was just like boom, 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 boom down the sides, you know. There were weeds hanging out of the license plates from where I'd gotten stuck up on some bushes. I'd fallen asleep at the wheel one more time. I just like to drive by braille, you know. I just drive while sleeping. That's my MO. I'm living with this guy, and I'm just totally insane. I'm absolutely insane. You know, I'm living with him, and if he doesn't give me what I want, I just go down to the corner, and I turn myself, you know, make myself a little bit of cash, and then I buy it from him, you know, and that's how I'm living. I couldn't believe that it could possibly get worse than it was, but what had happened was it wasn't that I was living worse than I was living. It's that I had a touchstone by which to measure how I was living, and I didn't have that before. You live in all that pain for all those years, you don't even know you're living in pain anymore. You know, the book talks about our life seems to be the only normal life. You know, we think that, like, this is normal. And it's so completely abnormal. But, you know, just that brief little time here in Alcoholics Anonymous was enough for me to realize how I was living and I couldn't get back. And I tell you, one day, man, I really, really, really needed to get out of that house. He liked to keep rum. I don't like rum, but that's okay. I'll drink it. But there wasn't even any rum, and he wasn't going to give me any drugs. And I was just, God almighty, I was just crawling out of my skin, and he was just driving me nuts. And he said, I got to have the truck. Can't have the truck. And I couldn't even make it down to the corner that day. And so I went in. We had just some little dots and something, you know. I went in the kitchen, I got that screwdriver out of there, and I ran down the stairs, and I popped that ignition, rubbed those wires together, fired that thing up, and right about then, he comes flying down the stairs, and he opens that truck door, and he yanks me out of there. He gets in there, and he goes to turn that thing off, and I look in the back of the truck, and in the back of the truck, there's a gas can, and it's got about that much gas in it, and you know what, I don't care, don't stand between me and what I need. And I reached back there, and I opened that thing up, and I poured it down the side of the truck, threw the rest in the window, reached in my pocket, and pulled out my trusty lighter, and went, whoom, and just walked away. You know, if you would have asked me right then, do I care about him? No, I do not. I do not care. I am absolutely insane with the disease of alcoholism. I need a drink. Thank God he got out of there. He got his shirt off. He managed to get out. He was fine. By the grace of God, not a hair on his head was hurt, which was too bad. He had an ugly hairstyle. I'm kidding. I really am kidding. God bless Willie, wherever he is. And I ran upstairs. I'm smart enough to know I've just committed a crime. Changed my shirt. You don't want to be walking down the street in a shirt that somebody might have seen you in when you just lit your boyfriend on fire in a truck. By then I'm on an adrenaline rush, and I went right out to the corner there, and I did what I needed to do to take care of myself. And a short period of time later, I was having grand mal seizures and seizures regularly. They were really not a big deal to me. I was dying. You know, I weighed about 40 pounds less than I do now. My skin was a gray pallor. My ribs were sticking out. My stomach was bloated. I was dying of malnutrition, and the skin was all peeling out of the inside of my mouth. And I was just a wretched sight. And I'd stand in the bathroom for hours putting on makeup before I'd go on one of my little calls in hopes that they could. You know, I remember one day I took my clothes off, and this guy looked at me and he said, "Don't you ever eat?" God. It was just too much reality for me that day. I was like, oh, gotta go. Oh, God, what a miserable life. And I had yet another grand mal seizure, and I ended up back in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this time I was ready, and I was willing to do whatever you want. I was not a model newcomer. I called up that lady. I said, "Will you please help me?" She said, yes, but are you willing to do it the AA way? Whatever you want me to do. But, I, you know, the problem with somebody like me is that I have been living in the streets and living like an animal for so long that it takes years for me to recuperate from that. I don't just go out and get myself a little job in the coffee shop and start showing up and going, hi, would you like a latte today? That's not my personality. I'm like, what do you want? You know, I'm just, you know, I wear all black. I'm foul-mouthed. I talk like a sailor, you know. You know, these women would get up to the podium and they'd have on pearls and little skirts, and I'm just a lady today and I wear a bra. I don't care. Why would I even want to wear a bra? What's that got to do with anything? I just, you know, I'm like, I don't want to wear, you know, my dream was not to get stand up at the podium wearing Laura Ashley with pearls in my ears. I just, you know, and people would say that. Well, I'm a lady today. Well, what's a lady? Who cares? You know, I'm going to go out and hit this woman, you know? And knock the lady right out of her. That's how I was. I just, my poor sponsor, God, you know, everything she told me to do, I just screwed it up bad. And, you know, she told me to get a job. I got arrested at 60 days. I called her up. I said, before she's told, I got arrested. She said, for what? I said, well, you know, and I told her what for. And she said, well, what were you doing that for? I said, you told me to get a job. She said, okay, I guess we're really going to have to start with square one with you. She was so sweet. I love her. She started to take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, teach me what the disease of alcoholism was. And that's when I realized that I had been an alcoholic for a very, very long time. That at 16 years old, I'd go out at night and I'd say, I'm going to be in at 10 tonight. I'm going to be in at 10. 10 o'clock would roll around and I'd say, midnight. We're drinking. We're shooting dice. We're drinking. Midnight roll around, well, 2 o'clock will be okay. Bars close at 2. I'm 16. I'm living on bar time. 2 o'clock would roll around. I'm not coming home. I'm drinking. You know, we're doing shots. We're playing dice. We're having fun. And then the sun comes up, and you have that sick feeling in the pit of your stomach because your mom and dad don't know where you are. You are not going to school that day. You did not call. You are not calling. What are you going to do? Call and say, hey, I'm up all night drinking beers and shooting tequila shots, playing dice. Not going to school. And so you don't call. And then that day turns into another day and another day and another day because I'm trying to control and enjoy my drinking, and I can't. And when I learned that, it was such a life-altering experience for me because that's when I realized what my problem was alcoholism. That's what had been wrong with me. That's what had been bothering me. And you guys had a solution for that. And I was angry when I got here. I was very angry. I'm a hoverer. You see them when they come in. They sit and they go like this. You know those? I love those. They sit and they're shaking their leg. I look and I go, oh, that's my girl. That's my girl. I don't see a lot of them like that anymore. God, why they come in so clean now? Jeez. Come in drunk. God almighty. Come in dirty and ugly. You know, I saw one in our meeting a couple of weeks ago. She came in and she was just a mess. And I looked over and her leg was shaking and I was like, oh. I went over and I go, how you feeling? Pretty bad, huh? You should see her now. She's still coming back. She's starting to get that spark in her eye and her leg sits still in the meeting. What a gift. So, I don't know. You know, I went through a series of jobs. I don't work well with others. My sponsor wanted me to get a job with my clothes on. I compromised. I got a job with my top off. And I don't care what you think about that. For a girl like me, the road to recovery was long, and I really don't care what you think because I'm standing here sober with my clothes on today with a job with my clothes on today. Educated, well-traveled, well-mannered. I don't wear Laura Ashley. But I do have floral skirts. I'll cop to that. Pink is my favorite color. It always was. I just didn't wear it for a long, long time. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. So my sponsor said, look, I don't even know what to do with you. You know, you can read, go to school, okay? I'm dyslexic. And I go to college, you can read, you're going to school. All right, I don't really want to go. You go to school. Okay, fine, I'm going to school. So I went to Orange Coast College and I signed up for class. And in the meantime, I'm working steps. And I'm starting to do my amends. And my amends with my mom and dad were one of some of my most challenging. You know, by now I've done a fourth and fifth step. And thank God I had a sponsor who could tell me about all that stuff when I was a kid, because I couldn't see how I had a part in it. You know, how did I have a part in that stuff when I was a little kid? I didn't. My part was that I hated my parents for it. I hated them for that. She said, why don't you start asking your parents about their childhood? Come to find out, my grandmother was like Hitler. God, no wonder my mom was a mess. My dad was kicked out of the house at 11 years old. Go get a job. He joined the 3Cs at 13. He used to jump train cars, and one day they hadn't eaten for 4 days, so they stole a head of lettuce. And he was kicked from pillar to post until he finally could join the Army Air Corps at the age of 16. That's a tough life for a little boy. That's a tough life. And it taught me to have a little compassion and understanding for where they came from, and just to have a little love and a little forgiveness. You know, that I'm not perfect, I'm flawed. That none of that was about me. None of it was about me. She told me that I had to start going over to that house on a regular basis, and I didn't want to do that. My mom's an alcoholic, she drinks, it's uncomfortable. I go over there, I don't know what she's going to be like. You know how we are. Oh, I love you. Oh, my God, I want to kill you. I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like. But I started showing up. She said, if it gets ugly, you just make your excuses, you smile, you tell them you love them, and you leave. You don't argue, you don't participate. You just say, oh, God, I've got an appointment, I'm going to have to get out of here, I've got to go meet my sponsor or whatever, and get out. And if it's good, you stay. And I said, all right, I can do that. And so then I started going to school. And I went to school, and I found out there was a brain in there. It wasn't completely damaged. And it worked pretty well, and I started getting really good grades. Real good grades. I made the National Honor Roll a year, and I joined the speech team, and a year and a half into my career there at Orange Coast College, my coaches told me, you know what, it's time for you to apply for scholarship. Nope, not me. Yes, you. Nope, not me. Apply for the scholarship. Fine, I'm applying. Do school like Alcoholics Anonymous. You show up early and you stay late. You have questions, you ask the teacher. They tell you to read the book, you read the book. They give you an assignment, you do it, and you do it on time. You do that, and you'll be a good student. I don't care how stupid you are. You don't have to have any brains. You just got to show up. It's brainless. Just do what they tell you, you'll be fine. That's what I did. So I applied for those scholarships, and I got a letter that said I got a scholarship and leadership award. A leadership award. Frightening. God almighty. They said I could bring two people to that honors night. It's a real big to-do at Orange Coast College. It's a real big to-do. It's beautiful what they put on, a huge banquet, and they utilize the whole school, the catering, and it's just amazing. And my mom and dad are sitting in there, and mine are like for speech and the Peg Taylor Award, and they're all done alphabetically, so mine are on that end of the alphabet, and I don't know that. And so, they get to M, and I'm like, oh, there's been a mistake. I'm not supposed to be here. You know how we are. Rack, 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 rack. Cats fighting in my head. Ralph! God, shut up! Would you just shut up? You know, you could just swear that people can hear it. And, finally, they called my name. My dad goes, they called your name. And I, oh, my God, and I stumbled up there, and you go up there, and you shake hands, and then you go outside, and you take a picture with the person who actually writes a check. They give you money. And they, and then you take a picture, and then you come back, and you sit down. I came back in to sit down, and my dad looked up at me, and he goes, they called your name again. You got to go back down. And I went back down, and I got my thing, and I went outside, and I took a picture, and I came back in. And I looked at my dad, and my dad had tears in his eyes. My dad is a World War II veteran. He's an old dog-faced soldier, and he does not cry. The buttons were just straining to burst off of his shirt. There were tears in his eyes, and he looked up at me, and he said, they just keep calling your name. And I knew that night that the road to recovery with my father had started, that he had finally had the opportunity to see his little girl become the woman that he had always wanted. That's all he wanted, just the good life for me. That's why he provided a private education and made all those sacrifices for me. My mom and dad were not rich. They just wanted the best for me. They wanted me to have everything they never had. And it was tough with my mom. I got to tell you, it was a couple years later, and I think I had 4 years of sobriety, and I was over there, and my mom went down the hall, and she took a pull off that bottle that was behind that door, and I love that bottle. There, oh. She went down the hall, she took a pull off the bottle, and she came back up and came back out, and I was sitting in her chair, and she stood in front of me, and she started to sway. And, up to that point, I'd always seen my mom as my drunken mom. She's just a drunken mother. And that day it hit me. I saw my mom as a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I finally saw her as an alcoholic. She was just another alcoholic woman. And I was so moved by that experience. I stood up and I held her with every fiber of my being. I said, I love you. She said, I love you and I need you. I said, I need you too, Mom. And so began the road to recovery with my mom and dad.
So I'm staying sober, and I'm, you know, I'm going to school, and I got a lot of accolades out of that college. I was given a scholarship to a little prestigious university in South Central Los Angeles. They have a good football team. And I went on to have an outstanding career there. I graduated with honors there. I had the privilege of inviting my mom and dad to come and see me graduate. I blew right through Phi Beta Kappa and right on to magna cum laude. And a girl like me coming from where I come from does not stand up and take degrees and honors like. And finally, that little girl that went to private school and sang in the choir, and sang in the chorus, and played the clarinet, and played the piano, and wanted to be baptized when she was 5 and finally returned. Because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. It's about recovery of everything that we've lost. We don't even know what we've lost. We think we've lost houses and jobs and stuff like that. That's not what we lost. We lose our souls. We lose the very essence of our being. And that fine little spirit that was starting to develop when I was a little girl that had long since been gone was starting to return. I like to share about this. I think it's important. A couple of years ago, I was working for this company, and I was very unhappy in my job, and I wanted to feel safe somewhere. I knew I couldn't leave the job, so I asked my mom and dad if I could come and move home, and my mom was very, very ill. My mom was a trooper. Dad liked to say she had a strong constitution, and she was an amazing woman. I used to look at her with such disdain, and today I know that I will never, ever even be half the woman my mother was. She was an incredible human being. She was brilliant. She was social. She could dance. She covered her alcoholism like nobody I've ever seen in my life. All of the physical incapacities that we suffer from, she suffered those in her own silence. All in her own silence. She didn't want to burden anybody. So I picked up the phone. I thought, God, that's an insane idea. I'm going to move home with my mom and dad. I just, you know, it was like one of those intuitive thoughts that you just go with it. I picked up the phone. I said, I'd like to come home. My mom and dad said, come on home. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, I'll move the 1st of September. And that weekend, I was moved out. I just packed up everything and moved out in 3 days. I was just gone. And I went home, and I started to realize how sick my mom had become. And there were some stains on the carpet. And I got down on my hands and knees, and I quietly cleaned those up without her seeing that, without her having to be embarrassed by that. And I started to clean the house because the house was dying of alcoholism. And instead of doing things my way, you know how we are. Well, I'm going to put this over here. I think it'll look good over there. Why don't we move the couch over here? Blah, 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 blah. You know how we are. We just like to get in there and do things our own way. Instead of doing that, I asked my mom, I said, you know, why don't we just do something maybe in the bathroom here? We'll get this cleaned out. What do you think about this? And she'd say, oh, why don't we put them in there? You know, and we work together. And my mom was just darling, just such a darling gal. And I'm down on my hands and knees, I'm scrubbing the floor. Me, on my hands and knees, scrubbing the floor. God, that's amazing. That's a miracle. And she's standing in the bathroom, and she's staring at me like a bug under a glass. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, what? She said, you have changed so much. God, I felt such a sense of relief that my mother could see what had happened to me finally. My mother didn't get sober. 3 months later, she woke up in the middle of the night. She had chest pains. 3 days later, they moved her to ICU. 3 days after that, she was dead. I got to stand there sober. I got to be there. I got to be there. I got to hold her hand. I got to be present. You know, when I'm drinking, I'm not present for anything. To stand there and hold your mom's hands in her last days is a gift that I will always cherish. And when she died, I called up a gal who had been helping me out, and I said, you know, my mom died, I don't know what to do. She said, you know what to do. She said, suck it up and get busy. Suck it up. And I said, she said, I want you to look. She says, your dad in there? And I said, yeah. She goes, take a good look at him. And I looked at him. She goes, how long have they been married? And I said, almost 45 years. They were 17 days short of 45 years of marriage. They almost killed each other, but they made it. She said, it's about him. He's the one who won't be sleeping with her tonight. She's your mother. It's natural. She said, so get busy. And so I did. I got out the Rolodex, and I started making all the phone calls, and I called the mortuary, and I made all the arrangements, and I did everything. And my little father walked around with his hands in his pocket, shuffling his feet, looking at the ground, and I thought, God, he's just going to lay down and die. He's just going to go with her. It just scared me to death. And I got busy. I got real busy, and it was hard, I'm going to tell you. It was not the easiest thing that I had ever done. But, man, I had friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had little alcoholic elves. You know about those little alcoholic elves? They come over, and they set up your house, and they clean your house while you're not even there. You come back, and, like, everything's done. You're like, wow, I like that. I wish they could do it right now while I'm in Vegas. No. And I overheard my dad saying to somebody at the memorial service, he said, I don't know what he would have done without her, and he pointed at me. You know, I have such an amazing life today. I can't even imagine. I just couldn't even imagine a life like I have today. You know, it is such a good life. I have so many friends. My phone just rings off the wall. I just am so busy all the time. I have such a sense of gratitude in my life. I have a great job. I've had such wonderful experiences. I've been all over the world. I can't even tell you. I don't even know how to put into words the life that I live today, but I want to share with you my greatest freedom that I have, and that is that today I wake up without the desire to drink. I don't think about it. I don't think about where the next one's coming from. I don't have to worry about the cheap little undignified, nasty task I'm going to have to perform to get what I need. My life isn't like that today. I don't spend 3 hours in the shower trying to scrub my sins off me today. I just get up in the morning and get myself a cup of coffee and go curl up on the couch with a big book. I get right with God, because without God, I am nothing. I get on my knees and I say my prayers on my knees on a pillow, granted. Put my little pillow on the ground. I like that. I would have made a very bad Catholic. What's up with those wooden bar things? Jeez, pat them. God almighty. They pat him? It's about time. Wow, what? I get right with my God, and then I get busy. When I go to work, I try to be the best employer that I can be. I'm successful in my business today because I do what you taught me to do. Go to work and do a good job. Go and give 110%. Some days I can only give 85%. Other days I give 120%, but I do the best that I can do. And then I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have the privilege of sponsoring a number of girls. I have a little girl who just had a little baby on Sunday. And I'm going to have the privilege of watching this little boy grow up. And Daddy's a football player for UCLA. So we're going to have to get all that straightened out, because he's not going there. I'd sing the fight song to his belly. I'm all fight on. I'd shake him, wave your little fingers. And I don't know if you guys know about all that, but anyways, she's like, stop that, stop that. Got to get them in the womb. And, you know, I had the privilege of going over there Tuesday night and sitting with that little baby, you know, holding him on my lap. And he's got these giant hands and feet like a hobbit. It's kind of scary. I know. I see my dad every Thursday night for dinner. Obviously, I won't be there tonight, but that's okay. We'll be there next week. He cooks me dinner. We hang out. We watch a movie. He talks. I listen. I try to listen. He mumbles a lot. He's losing his hearing, so I just nod a lot. Yeah, oh, yeah. And I just couldn't be happier. I just couldn't have asked for a better life. I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful to all of the people who've gone before me who give me something to aspire to. And I'm so grateful for those of you coming after me that remind me that it still doesn't work out of there. It's a good life. If you're new, I pray that you stick around. I implore you to just try, you know, to stay one day at a time. Do what we do, you know, just do what we do, and you'll get what we get. And if you don't know what that is, don't worry. It's better than what you've got, because if you're sitting here, life isn't good. So thanks for letting me share.